In an instant, I move like the seasoned athlete I am. I grab her and carry her to the couch where I tip her over my lap and flip up her pleated skirt. Her sheer, blush-colored panties almost make my cock misfire. She doesn't struggle until the first couple of slaps land on her gorgeous, upturned ass. Then she gasps and tries to break free. I pin her arm in the small of her back to subdue her and spank her harder.
Don't! My God! You can't!
Her words are soft and breathy, drawing out the darkening need. After your punishment, I'm gonna fuck you hard all night. Her head shakes, the ponytail thrashing wildly. Then I hear a noise. Shit, I didn't lock the door. I grab her around the waist as I stand, but I'm not quick enough to get her on her feet before we've got company. I freeze, still holding the girl against me as I stare at her carbon copy. Nails dig into my forearm. But it still takes me several seconds to drag my eyes away from the livid young woman whose gaze is darting between me and the girl I've been seducing. What the fuck? I say as I set the girl in my arms down. She scrambles away from me and turns with an accusatory look, reaching back to rub her ass with her small hands.
How could you?
The girl who's just entered demands. She's Taylor. I realize. My gaze jerks back to the one I had over my lap. She's clone-worthy, seriously. Who are you? I demand. What the fuck is this?
That's my little sister, Declan, Taylor snaps. What the hell?
The younger sister rushes from the room, slamming the door behind her.
She's off-limits.
Off-limits? I murmur as I stare at the door the sweeter girl used to escape. I want the one who left. There will need to be an apology and a promise to take things slower, but then,
yeah.
She is, Taylor says in a bitter tone. Unless you want to get arrested.
She's underage.
And just like that, it's no longer a mistake. It's a felony. Running a hand through my hair, I scowl. Taylor Reynolds is a liar. She claimed Cameron was underage that night. But when our investigator got actual records, they proved that, at the time of the party, Cameron was 18. Of course, by then, I'd already sent Shane with a settlement offer. Cameron refused the money and promised there would be no further action related to the library incident. At the time, I liked that she shrugged off what had happened as a mistake. I thought I'd gotten lucky and considered the situation closed. On and off, I even thought about arranging to see her again. Then, a couple weeks back, I learned her family had demanded a payday after all. As soon as the bowl game's over, there will be a confrontation. If she wanted more money than the 50 grand I offered her, she should have said so. Instead, she made a promise to me that put my mind at ease. And then she broke it. Even among relative strangers, betrayal isn't allowed. From now on, she's the one who is going to pay. Not me.
Chapter 6. Casanova.
I've driven by your parents' house. There's a candle burning in the window all the time. As I lean against the cellar's stone wall, my words fall on deaf ears. Chains rattle as the bound girl moves, writhing like a bag of snakes. The small bed barely stays beneath her as she thrashes and twists. Speaking aloud again so I can savor the thought, I say, it's your family's never-ending Christmas vigil for their little lost girl. Her movements don't change whether I speak or remain silent. She's trapped in her own world right now. In the shell of her lovely young body. I've enjoyed this one. Her recall is exceptional. The description she gave of the iron light fixture in the Dark Knight's secret playroom is fuel for the fire. In my mind's eye, I see each girl kneeling on the Persian rug in subjugation. Her fate sealed. Here in the dark underground, this girl began in the guise of all women, reaching back to the beginning of time. Temptation, Sin. Disorder. I transformed her. Now it's time to make room for the next one in my collection. A new rose has been chosen. I just need to pluck her.
Chapter 7. Cameron. 2 days after Christmas, in the early morning darkness, I drive home to my studio apartment in a fourplex that was converted from a single-family home. My apartment is nicer and less expensive than living in the dorm, but living off-campus requires me to take a bus to school, since only upperclassmen are allowed to have cars on GU grounds. Parking my 9-year-old Civic between two posts, I glance around at the quiet street. Because I've arrived while it's still dark out, I'm glad Casanova, the man who was abducting co-eds, was killed by his last intended victim. Before then, everyone said neighborhoods off campus were safe, since he'd taken his victims from the university grounds. But I thought there was nothing to stop him from branching out, and that he probably would, as campus police and student organizations ramped up their patrols. His final attack was miles from school. He'd apparently stalked the female student, Avery Kershaw, all the way to New Hampshire and attacked her there. Fortunately, she fought back and killed him. When they showed his photo, I recognized him from campus events. He wasn't what I expected. Daniel Take was a skinny, hipster-looking guy. In my imagination, Casanova was bigger, rougher, and definitely older. Take seemed like the kind of guy who could roofie and date rape a girl, but not someone who'd be physically capable of silently abducting a woman and making her disappear without a trace. Leaving pale roses, and the classic literature tie-in also didn't jibe with Take's plaid shirts and baggy jeans. The whole thing proves once again you can never judge a book by its cover. As soon as I open the house's front door, the smell of curry wafts into my nose, making me smile. One of my neighbors made some incredible samosas before we left for break and shared them with all of us. I close the front door and head down our shared hall to my apartment's inner door. My place is a rear unit that faces the yard. My back door leads directly outside, but I almost never use it since I park in front. Setting my bag down on the linoleum, I toe off my shoes. The cuffs of my snowflake pajamas skim the floor as I walk to the fridge. I left my mom so early this morning, I didn't bother to shower and dress in regular clothes. Normally, I wouldn't be back on campus until school resumed. But the tension at my mom's house is unbearable. Before the shady nighttime clinic visit, I told Mom and Taylor I'd worked out a way to get the Hayworths to leave us alone. But the morning after cutting the clinic visit short, I told them there had been a problem with the negotiations, and I wasn't sure anymore how things would go. That caused Taylor to panic, thinking they might blackball notable events, where she's now a coordinating manager. And my mom panicked over the situation with the house. They wanted details about what happened, but I didn't elaborate. If my family had any idea that the Hayworths had proposed I use my body as payment, it would have just made things worse. Part of the reason my mom blackmailed them in the first place was because she was so furious about the scene with Declan and wanted to make him pay for it. Taylor should never have told Mom about it at all, but Tay can't resist drama. She totally wound Mom up by delivering an emotionally charged version of what happened, making the library incident sound way worse than it was. My saying it was no big deal was ignored. Mom thought I was downplaying things so she wouldn't worry, but I honestly wasn't. It was a simple case of mistaken identity, and I wasn't hurt. In a private conversation between the two of us, Tay admitted she told Declan she was willing to try out being spanked. For all I know, she might have suggested it. Taylor's always been a wild one. I usually admire her for it. Unlike me, Taylor doesn't overthink things. If she likes a guy, she flirts with him and gets what she wants out of the encounter. I'm the opposite. Most of the time, guys push way too fast and turn me off. Or they're so unsure of themselves that things turn awkward. Except for one guy. Declan Hayworth managed to turn me on despite his insanely aggressive moves. The feeling of being swept off the ground is something I'll never forget. So strong. So confident. Of course, it ended in disaster since I was the wrong girl and we were caught. I wonder a lot about what would have happened if Taylor hadn't walked in on us. Ugh, Taylor, I think with a sigh. I'm pretty sure her outrage over what happened to me was because she'd been interested in Declan herself. I tried to smooth things over, saying several times he only came on to me because he thought I was her. But since things between them never resumed after the library incident, she stayed pissed. In the days that followed, Declan didn't respond to Taylor's texts. Instead, he texted me, saying he hoped I was all right and that he wanted to meet in person to talk. I don't know how he got my number, but I kept my response limited to two words. I'm fine. I ignored his follow-up text because Taylor would have gone ballistic if she found out he was texting me. Also, I figured seeing Declan in person would be kind of humiliating. There was no reason to put myself through that. It's not like Declan Hayworth and I were ever going to see each other again. Or so I'd thought at the time. Pressing the button on the espresso machine, I lean against the counter to wait. Within seconds, the machine burbles to life, and the delicious smell of coffee fills the air. When I didn't respond to his second text, Declan sent his friend Shane Morin to pay me off, so I'd keep quiet about what happened. I tore the check in half and gave it back to Morin, saying I didn't want money and had no interest in stirring the pot. I added that I wasn't hurt or upset, so no harm, no foul. Shane pocketed the pieces of the $50,000 check and nodded. "Good for you," he said. "Plenty of people would have taken the money." His cool green eyes assessed me, as though he could determine the true nature of my character. "Just to be clear, though, this is a one-time offer. If you show up later with your hand out or start running your mouth, that will not go over." Flexing his big biceps, he'd glanced around casually. Then he rattled off my address and the name of the hospital where my mom works as a radiology technician. "I want you to understand that tracking you and your family down takes about 5 minutes. He paused for effect, then continued with a pointed hard look that sent a frigid wave of fear crashing over me. "My friend is inclined to write checks. I'm not. My style of handling problems is harsher. And believe me when I tell you, if you target Declan, I'll view it as an attack on me. If you want to know what it's like to have your life burned down around you, come for us, and you'll find out." Asshole. There was something in his manner that told me he wasn't making empty threats. Mustering every bit of my courage, I managed to keep my voice steady. "I already said I'm not interested in causing trouble." "Good. Then neither of us is." After a beat, he nodded. "Take care of yourself." With that, Shane Morin left the Hamptons Hotel where Taylor and I had been staying. The one I fled the same day, hoping to never see him again. I have spotted him occasionally at GU. I always turn and walk the other way. "Granthorpe," I think sourly, pursing my lips. "I just found out I only got in with a scholarship because of the Hayworths. I have no idea what will happen at the end of the year, now that not only is no one forcing them to help me, but they have reasons to sabotage me instead. All my work on the Granthorpe Daily Dispatch will be for nothing if I lose my scholarship. My phone rings, and it's Taylor. I warned them last night I was planning to leave early, but I didn't say I might leave before any of them were awake. Swiping green, I say, "Hey, sis." "Hey, Cam, you deserted us? No, I just thought it would be better to come back here and..." "You need to tell me what's going on. What exactly did you agree to do and then bail on?" I'm silent for a moment. It doesn't matter now. It does. "Mom's tires were slashed in the hospital parking garage." Oh my God. My mind goes immediately to Shane Morin's threat. But she's okay, right? Yeah, mostly. She's shaken up. And we got an email first thing this morning about the foreclosure process, Tay exclaims. Some subsidiary real estate company took over the bank loan a while ago, and their deadline is even shorter than the bank's was. Clenching my jaws, I turn toward the window. Fuck. Declan's revenge has begun. She shouldn't have blackmailed them, I hiss in frustration. Powerful people are dangerous, and they have dangerous friends. I blow out of breath, my whole body shaking. I'm sure Declan's super pissed because I promised I would never ask for money or talk about what happened. You guys should have left it alone, like I told you to. Yeah, well, it's too late now. And he deserved it. I scowl. He made a mistake. We're not identical twins. Do you really think he thought you were me? My brows crinkle in surprise. Yeah, I'm sure he did. He'd have to be a psycho to pull that move on someone he'd never met. A shadow moves outside the window and I freeze. My God, I whisper. What? There's someone in my yard.
Chapter 8. Declan. As I jog downstairs, the smell of sizzling vegetables hits me, making my mouth water.
Morning, sir,
Briggs says when I enter the kitchen. Morning. The 28-year-old chef sports a dark brown man bun that makes him seem vaguely European. He's actually from Louisiana.
Mr. Moran and Mr. Sorensen are in the front room.
Already, I say with a smile. Must have smelled the caramelized onions and come on the run. As I stroll toward the front, my phone rings. It's Brock again, pushing in ways he normally doesn't. A while back, he had a cocaine problem. I'm starting to wonder whether he's fallen off the wagon. When I answer, he exhales what sounds like a panting breath.
Have you spoken to the girl?
I haven't spoken to anyone. My tone is laced with impatience, which he doesn't acknowledge.
Good.
Brock's breath huffs out again.
Listen, I'm arranging a DK party in South Carolina for after the game. The out-of-town members want to meet you, so plan to come by to say hello.
I can't speak for that night yet. We'll see.
Right.
Sure.
Talk to you soon.
He ends the call, and my eyes narrow. When I was young, Brock and my Aunt Liz never took an interest in me. Not even right after my mom died. Now that I'm a winning quarterback, he's a barnacle that's attached himself to my hull. I need to scrape him off. Before I reach the front room, Eric Sorensen, the best defensive back in college football, appears in the hall, consuming space like a black hole. Eric's half Danish and looks like a quintessential Scandinavian. Blonde hair, light blue eyes, massively tall at 6'9". Off the football field, he's stoic and calm. On field, he earns his nickname, the Viking Berserker. Morning, I say.
Morning. I've got to eat. See you in there,
he says as he passes me on the way to the kitchen. Entering the front room, I find Shane lying on a narrow antique settee that was never intended for the purpose. His legs hang over the end. This could be why Eric decided not to wait for us.
What are you doing?
I ask. Exactly what it looks like, he says without opening his eyes. Are you hungover?
Irishmen don't get hungover. I'm resting.
That causes me to crack a smile. Spending time with his gangster grandfather always makes Shane interesting company. Where's the girl? I thought Avery would be in your pocket, as usual.
The girl as well,
he says in a tone that borders on surly. Thanks for asking. I chuckle. For a long time, Shane's silent preoccupation with his little stepsister was not cause for amusement. Now they've gotten together, and surprisingly, having her seems to make him happy. Avery's strange company these days. She was always studious and reserved, but now she often seems dazed and distracted. She had a brutal altercation with Casanova, and she's carrying a lot of bloody baggage from the encounter.
Her moments of quiet gloom don't put Shane off, though. If anything, they seem to make him more attentive. I sit. Eric went to eat. I imagine he needs to. Glancing at the doorway to be sure we're alone, I say, I've got an issue. Can we discuss it? Or should I wait until you've had coffee for your non-hangover? Shane draws in a deep breath and sits up.
Hit me.
I explain about the blackmail.
I wonder what made the younger one do it, Shane says.
Greed, I presume. And need. His clear green eyes shift, taking in the room and something that's beyond it. His gaze swivels back to me, settling on my face.
Did she give a reason? Imply that someone forced her?
My brows rise.
Why would you think anyone forced her?
The corner of his mouth quirks.
You weren't the one who talked to her, Deck. I was. I made sure she understood that talking out of turn would mean trouble.
For the first time, it occurs to me that Shane didn't just go as cover for me. Did you threaten her? He levels his gaze on me, which answers my question as well as words could. I frown. That's not what I'd intended. Brock's the problem I might need a hand with, I say. I told him to leave it alone. He's not. Shane's eyes narrow. That asshole's been riding coattails for a long time. And like anyone who tries to steal power, he's always scheming, agreed. My lips curl down in disapproval.
He's turned a room in the Boston Club into a sex dungeon, complete with sex furniture. The founders must be rolling in their graves.
A small smile plays at the corners of Shane's mouth as he shrugs. How much have you told Avery about your past?
Not much.
His palm settles over his chest.
She's my angel.
Angel ears don't need to hear about dark deeds. Angel, huh? Even though she's a killer?
Shane's brows rise. I wouldn't say she's a killer. She has killed. Special circumstances.
She could kill 100 more the same way with zero barring on her angel status. I chuckle. She can do no wrong. That's it. Glad you understand. His smile is unabashed. One of these days, you'll feel that way yourself about some angel-eyed girl.
No.
Shane is more hot-blooded than I am. He always has been. I'll never be obsessed with a woman. It's not in me. About Brock, I continue. Be discreet. He helped create the dirt he's got on me. Presumably he did that for a reason. Shane taps a small scar on his palm where we exchanged blood as kids. It's his shorthand for saying he's got my back. That, I believe, some things never change, and our friendship is one of them.
Before you come to breakfast, Deck, you should check out what your fan club did to the yard.
Oh, God, I say with a grimace. Now what?
No one's worthy like the Hayworthy's fan club, he says with mock gravity. That's true love right there.
For fuck's sake. Why didn't Shane and Eric tell me sooner that the front yard needed to be dealt with?
Chapter 9. Cameron. By the time I find my flashlight and point it out my back windows, the intruder has disappeared. To be sure he's not vandalizing my house or slashing my tires, I go to the entryway and look out. The street seems deserted. Should I call the police? Taylor asks for the third time. No, he didn't actually do anything. Maybe he was just cutting through the yard. Why? I don't know, I say impatiently. But I don't want to get carried away because of Mom's tires. Listen, Tay, I should go. We haven't even talked about the Hayworths yet. Let me help you, Cammy. I'm the reason we're in this. Maybe I'll reach out to Stowe. He likes me. My lip curls in disgust. I don't buy Brock Stowe's middleman act. There's clearly something at stake for him. Or why would a middle-aged millionaire run errands for his nephew? Don't trust Stowe, Taylor. He's vile. I'm not talking to him anymore. You probably have to. Mom's trying to arrange a meeting, but he told her he wants to speak to you first. I stiffen, sinking my teeth into my lower lip. Fuck. No way. Exhaling, I straighten my spine. It's time for me to talk to the source. The source? Declan Hayworth. This started with the two of us. I need to convince him that's where it should end. How would you reach him? By knocking on his door? You know where he lives? Everyone on campus knows where he lives. Hayworth House is a stop on the freaking tour. After showering and dressing for the weather, I head out. By now, my neighbors are jogging and walking their dogs. Professor Heinrich, the Daily Dispatch's stout editor-in-chief, stands on his porch wearing a coat, jeans, and gray house slippers as he berates someone over the phone. This is not unusual behavior. I would kill to be the student editor of the Dispatch, but I don't know how I'd react to being yelled at all the time. Still, I'm happy I'm making progress. Last month, two of my stories made the second page. The front page went to the Casanova series, an assignment I desperately wanted. Heinrich gave it to the mysterious Rickson, who never even shows up to the Dispatch offices for meetings. My drive to the block of historical homes where Hayworth House is located is quick. When classes aren't in session, there's no traffic. I'm forced to park down the block because there are so many Declan Hayworth fans loitering on the sidewalk. Cray paper, streamers, and plastic celebration beads hang from the trees. Another show of support honoring him for his athletic prowess. I fight to not roll my eyes. Alumni donations, which are always robust apparently, have doubled in the past 2 years because GU is enjoying its best football seasons ever. And the alumni donations fund many things, including some student programs. Even the Dispatch benefits. Declan might not be good for me personally, but he is great for the school and the paper. As I get closer to his house, I note that two men on the sidewalk wear jerseys and have GU gear and Sharpies. They're apparently hoping to get memorabilia signed, either for themselves or to sell. The three women closest to the gate wear jackets with Declan's image emblazoned on the back, one with just his face, and two with his bare-chested torso from the Rebels Creed ad. Wow. Completely insane. Most historic homes are well-maintained, but there's an extra bit of polish to Hayworth House. It's a large red brick building, somewhere around 15,000 square feet, with gold and bronze accents that look freshly applied. The 10-foot-tall front gate has a pair of script H's in its center, along with a small embedded camera and doorbell button. A woman who wears a miniskirt that barely surpasses the hem of her Declan coat grabs the gate as I begin to pull on it. "Who are you?" she asks. My shrug is casual. "No one." "You don't have an appointment," she announces, as if she's Declan's secretary rather than a lunatic groupie. "Eric Sorensen and Shane Morin are in there having breakfast with him." I pause at the mention of Morin's name. He's not someone I want to see. My breath fogs the air as I blow it out in frustration. Do I come back? If I wait, there are no guarantees Declan won't leave town, robbing me of the chance to meet with him. And meanwhile, things could get worse for my family. Slashed tires, Cammy. Do this now. "Thanks for letting me know," I murmur, pressing forward. After I push the button, a speaker emits a male voice that asks me my name and business. I don't think it's Declan. His voice is smoother and deeper. The fans congeal into a blob around me, as if they'll be able to reach through the intercom to touch Declan. "I'm here to see Mr. Hayworth. We know each other. Can you tell him Cameron Reynolds needs to speak with him?" The gate slides open, and the fans point their phones at me, deciding I may be someone who matters after all. Quickly tucking my chin toward my chest to avoid being filmed, I march up to the house. The front door opens. A guy with a messy brown bun sprouting from the top of his scalp peers out at me through the screen. He's drying his hands with a GU blue and bronze linen napkin, which makes me wonder if he too was having breakfast with Declan. He doesn't look big enough to be a football player or a member of Declan's security team. "Mr. Hayworth only sees people by appointment. If you give me your contact information, I'll pass along a message and call you back to arrange a meeting if that's what he wishes." Oh, The man is Declan's personal assistant. If he's already here, his workday must start at the crack of dawn. Please ask him if he'll see me this morning. I'm willing to wait until he has time in his schedule. My voice is polite but firm. I'm definitely not leaving before Declan knows I'm on his doorstep. The man's expression darkens as he assesses me from head to toe, taking in my bulky jacket, jeans, and felt and rubber winter boots. With disapproving pursed lips, the man turns. Wait here. Before I can speak again, he closes the front door, carefully facing forward so the groupies on the sidewalk can't get a glimpse of my face. I grimace at the thought of not being admitted. Minutes tick by, making my nerves buzz like a phone. When the door opens, the bund assistant gives me an almost warm smile. Opening the screen door, he ushers me inside. Mr. Hayworth, we'll see you in a few minutes. If your shoes are wet, leave them at the door. There are men's boots nearby on a rubber mat. I'd prefer to keep mine on, but tracking salty slush over precious floors obviously isn't acceptable. I unlace the bindings and remove them, feeling small in my fuzzy snowman socks. I'm led to a library where the books smell deliciously old. There's a stone fireplace that looks original, but the paneled walls have been painted ice blue. A large painting of a water nymph decorates the only wall without bookshelves. I sit in a gilded chair with thick tufted eggplant-colored cushions and giant padded arms. I feel like Alice in Wonderland, right before the Queen of Hearts shouts, "Off with their heads!" What would you like to drink? Coffee? A champagne cocktail? My brows rise. Nothing for me. He purses his lips again in that sour way. Nothing at all? Tea? Sparkling water? I get the sense that my refusal may reflect poorly on him. All right, coffee. A little cream, no sugar. Done, he says, leaving. Within 10 minutes, he returns with a tray of fruit, cured meats, and bagels and scones, along with clotted cream, lemon curd, butter, and jam. There is also a cup of coffee in exquisite bone china. Did Mr. Hayworth say to bring this? I'm surprised Declan would go out of his way, especially considering our current situation. A linen napkin is flicked open and dangled before me. This is Hayworth House, not a Holiday Inn. Every guest who is having a private meeting with the family is offered refreshments, in keeping with its 107-year-old standards. Is he for real? And if so, shouldn't he be wearing servant's livery and a powdered wig while delivering lines like that? I take the linen napkin and rest it on my lap. Well, thank you. He exits through a hidden door that's tucked in the shadows of a massive bookcase. My cup freezes partway to my mouth as I look around. What is this place? By the time I hear the doorknob turn, I've eaten a scone so delicious it would make the King of England weep. And I've drunk every drop of the incredible dark roast coffee. Declan Hayworth enters. And in the morning sun, he's the closest approximation of a god of light I've ever seen. His dark hair gleams like patent leather. It doesn't seem real. Nothing about him does. Was my message unclear? His voice is as deep as I remember, and harder. Blinking, I clutch one thick chair arm to steel myself. What message? One of my security team went to your house in Boston. I said I'd contact you after the 3rd of January. No one talked to me. Leaning forward, I tilt my head. Just so you know, I didn't have anything to do with going to your uncle for money. Until 2 weeks ago, I had no idea my family did that. His flawless features show only a flicker of surprise as his brows rise slightly. But then his expression is shattered again. And just so you know, I hold you personally responsible for whatever your mother did with the information you gave her. When he moves closer, I expect him to sit down, but he doesn't. Rising to my feet so he's not towering over me doesn't work as well as I'd like. He's big and I'm in socks. I didn't give her information. My sister did. Irrelevant, he says, frowning. How can you say that's not relevant? You could have denied it. Or said we were playing games. Easy enough to downplay things if you want to defuse the situation. I didn't feed the fire, but I didn't think to do what you're suggesting. Lying and covering things up isn't in my wheelhouse. Scowling impatiently, his tone turns as cold as the weather. Why are you here? I want us to sort things out before they get worse. His brows draw together in a menacing expression. Worse for whom? My breath catches and turns ragged as his hostile gaze rakes over me. I'm not threatening you in any way. I just want to resolve things. My family should never have asked you for money. They didn't ask me. They asked someone else, which is worse. The piercing look he gives me causes me to stiffen. I'm sorry. If I'd known, I would have stopped them, but I didn't know, so I'm here now. I'll make things right. How do you plan to do that? I'll pay back the money, and I'll sign a statement denying anything happened. If things ever become public, I'll say my sister made the story up, and I'll get them to keep their mouths shut from now on. A recorded video statement saying Taylor lied and your mother used those lies to extort money is a good start. I'll say Taylor made up a false story, but I won't use the word extort or blackmail in reference to my mom. I'm not going to mention her at all. You don't need that. Our goal is to keep all this a secret, right? And the 75 grand? Where will that come from? We'll get it to you. It'll take some time. Not acceptable. You offered me $50,000. I'm betting you told your friend to offer me more if necessary. His mouth forms a hard line. I thought you were underage at the time. That's what your sister told me. Rolling my eyes, I shake my head. I was 18. I know. But that night, she threatened me with jail. Unable to hide my grimace, I exhale a disgusted sigh. What a nasty thing for Taylor to do. Deep down, it infuriates me. But I can't see the point of discussing it. What's done is done. Taylor can be dramatic when she's angry. Can we just focus, though? We both know $75,000 is pennies to you. Let me come up with a payment plan my family can handle. And drag this out for years? No. He studies my face. Your other offer was better. A wave of dread rolls over me. What other offer? Stunning blue eyes that are as cold and hard as sapphires hold my gaze. You tell me. No, you tell me. What do you want? Stepping forward, he grasps my hair and pulls my head back as he leans down. His voice is low but rough in my ear. I want you to give yourself to me. A bolt of lightning strikes my spine, nearly buckling my knees. If you give me 2 weeks of complete control, there won't be any debt or any retribution. The slate will be wiped clean, he says. My heart thumps wildly in my chest. I want to say yes, and not only because I need to rescue us. His grip on my hair is doing something to me deep between my legs. My voice is shaky and whisper soft. If you promise to, no conditions, Cameron. His thumb strokes my scalp right where he's pulling on my hair. You'll be mine. And I'll do what I want with you. My nipples bead with a throb of anticipation. He's better at coercion than he has any right to be, especially under the circumstances. I'm not the one you want for something like that. I'm not experienced, so I wouldn't be good at it. You don't need to know anything. You just need to do what I tell you. My entire body shudders. Say no, Cammy. It's too dangerous. Say no way. Alarms wail in my head, causing me to shake. He could do anything to you. Totally sketchy. Say no. This close, he smells like sandalwood soap and something incredibly male. That deliciousness assaults my mind, too. Trying to distract me. To entice me. I'm completely torn. Declan's left hand slides down and squeezes my ass, sending another lightning strike through me, this one to my core. The arousal is breathtaking. With his lips against my ear, he whispers, "Say yes, Cameron." My voice is barely audible, even to me. "Yes." I'm instantly terrified and hope he didn't hear me. Then he speaks, and I know he did. "Good girl."
Chapter 10. Declan. I'm seconds away from peeling Cameron Reynolds' clothes off and fucking her seven ways from Sunday on the Australian sheepskin rug. A knock on the door puts a wrecking ball through that plan. Which is good, because some animal part of me has taken over. There is something about our chemistry that is fucking dangerous. At the knock, Cameron jerks back so hard she loses her balance. Grabbing her arms, I catch her and keep her from falling. "Nice reflexes, quarterback. You've got all the moves, don't you?" Her tone is tart, which is such a surprise that it draws a smirk to my mouth. "You'll soon find out." My thumb grazes her breast before she backs too far away for me to touch. A persistent knock causes me to turn. "Come," I call out. The door opens, and Briggs appears in the doorway. "The virtual meet with your grandfather is in 5 minutes." "Right. Thanks, Briggs." As he starts to retreat, I say, "Close the door." There's a flash of pursed lips and drawn-together brows as the door closes. Briggs doesn't approve of my bringing casual hookups into the inner sanctum. I don't give a fuck what he thinks. But for the moment, he's filling in for my personal assistant who's out of town. Since Briggs is doing double duty, I won't call him out over his attitude. This time. Cameron shakes her head, looking bemused. "Must be nice to have an Alfred, huh?" Clearly too much blood has been diverted to my hard cock, because it takes a beat for me to get the obvious reference. If I'm Batman, does that make her my little Catwoman? That thought brings another wave of lust crashing over me. I want her naked, pinned beneath me and purring. I'm gonna make that happen. Soon. It doesn't suck. "Listen, I have a full day of meetings, so I don't have time to oversee you." Cameron's brows rise in surprise. "Oversee me?" She scoffs. "I'm not a child." That sassy mouth. If only I had time to punish her for it in a way that would turn us both on. My palm twitches, sending special messages to my cock that practically make me groan out loud. "Down, boy. Work first, then play. As always." "I'm out of time, so you need to go. Before you do, give Briggs your number. He's going to text you my instructions." Her lips pout, and her fist lands on her hip like she's taking a stand. Fucking adorable. I regret again that I don't have time to pull her jeans and panties down to spank her into submission. Touching her tongue to the bow of her upper lip, she scrutinizes me warily. What kind of instructions? A warning tap on the door causes me to frown. "I'm out of time for you. But later, we'll pick up where we left off." As I start to walk away, she says, "Declan?" I don't stop my progress to the door, but I do answer. "Yeah?" "Before this is officially settled, there are some things we have to work out." "It's settled. But I'll explain anything you don't understand later." "Who told you arrogance was a virtue?" The words are spoken softly, but the room's quiet enough for her to know I'll hear them. My steps slow for a moment. Then I shake my head. There is one person in the world who can't be kept waiting, and he's on a video call. Waiting. And this is after the grandson he's made his heir didn't make it to see him on Christmas because of stormy weather. I need to hustle. Deal with her later, when you have time. Then you can savor every second.
Cameron. An hour after I leave Hayworth House, a list is texted to me from Briggs, the bohemian butler. Briggs: visit Angelica's Brazilian wax and spa. Ask for Sarah. Briggs:
Call SheGirl Couture and Tani at Unmet to provide your stats. At SheGirl, ask for Eden's buyer. Briggs, bill and ship to Hayworth House.
Cameron, my stats? You mean my measurements?
Briggs, know your rest and heart rate and day steps. Arrow emoji, of course your measurements.
Oh my god, even his butler is an arrogant jerk. And Declan having his employee instruct me on personal grooming for my stint as his concubine is way over the top and creepy.
Briggs, you are due back at HH at 7 for dinner. Make haste.
Cameron, I'm not doing any of this till I talk to Declan. Tell HRH to call me.
Briggs, your funeral, kitten.
Screw you both, I think furiously. My nose wrinkles, and I shove my phone in my pocket. Within 10 minutes, I'm online investigating the boutiques. Unmets is cute slang for unmentionables. It's a lingerie shop specializing in bras and panties. And if the prices are anything to go by, its main customers are the mistresses of millionaires and high-end call girls. The couture boutique deals in fashion that's even more exclusive and expensive. My favorite piece on the main page costs $27,000. Throwing an arm over my eyes, I groan. Declan's fortune is infuriating and gross. How can he torture my family over $75,000 and then hook me up with clothes that will quickly run him way more? I'm still lying on my back, biting my lip, when my phone chirps with an incoming text.
Briggs, HRH calling in 60 seconds, pick up.
Unbelievable. Moments later, the phone rings from a blocked number. I want to ignore it, but I don't dare. Declan could still destroy my family like we're an opposing football team. I swipe to accept the call. Hey.
What do you need?
Declan's voice is as low and ominous as the music in a psychological thriller. Need? Nothing. After licking my lips for a beat, I continue. Definitely not new peach undies in embroidered tulle. Or an original red pocket dress number 7 by Stella Jane.
Do you want your mother to keep her house? Or do you want to be the one who loses it for her?
The blood drains from my face. He is fucking evil. Declan!
You've lost the right to call me Declan.
In the background, I hear a knock, and then Briggs says,
So the dean is on the landline.
The dean of what, Granthorpe? For fuck's sake. I hate how powerful he is.
I'll be right there, Briggs.
When Declan speaks again, his voice is lower.
Don't waste my time again. Either do what you're told, or prepare for the consequences.
I want to tell him to fuck off, but that would be rash and I'd regret it. Three words do slip out before I can catch them. I hate you, I whisper.
Go ahead. Just do it silently and with your legs spread as you get waxed.
The fucking gall. Goodbye, I snap. Swiping the phone screen, I end the call and throw the phone away from me. No wonder he needs a security team. There must be a line of people who'd like to put a bullet in his brain. At the moment, I want to push my way to the front of that line.
Declan.
What's funny, sir?
Briggs asks, holding out a cordless phone. After checking to be sure the mute function is engaged, I try to smother my smile. Briggs waits for an answer, but I just shake my head.
As usual, Cameron Reynolds is full of surprises. A virgin and a brat. How do those two states of being coexist? They should be like water vapor and ice, not compatible at once. And yet...
Briggs, make your brioche bread pudding with the bourbon chocolate sauce tonight.
He freezes. That has cream in it. And bourbon. I thought you weren't... The game... It's not for me. I'm looking forward to having it next week after South Carolina. It'll be a reward.
His sculpted brows, which are coated with some sort of grooming gel, rise.
Excellent. And how many guests for dinner tonight?
Just one.
His lip curls in distaste.
The girl could wait for bread pudding until you can have it too.
She could, if that's the way I wanted it. Inclining my head toward the kitchen, I tapped the button to unmute the phone. Hello, Dean? It's Declan. What can I help you with? After my meetings and my workout, I shower and try to clear my mind. I'm not successful. The quiet, cavernous space and running water usually create an environment that facilitates my switching gears. Tonight, though, I can't stay in the moment. My mind keeps circling to the fact that soon a certain girl will be installed in the house, and I'll have hours to play with her before I go to bed. Swiveling the tap, I turn the water icy. The shock makes me draw back, but also sharpens my mind and body. Turning off the water, I draw in a deep breath. Cameron's a virgin. And tonight's an appetizer, not the main course. I shouldn't take her virginity until after the game when there's time to make a night of it. Once I'm dressed, I head downstairs. The dining room table is set, but it's empty except for a bowl of fresh baked bread and some olive oil and balsamic vinegar. I check my watch. 7:07. She's late. Sitting down at the head of the table, I grab the linen napkin that's been folded into the shape of a flower. I flick it to unfold it and drop it in my lap as I glance at the doorway. The first order of business tonight will be to discuss punishments. The second will be to spank her peach of an ass until it's bright pink. The image of her squirming over my lap hits me like a freight train, and my cock hardens instantly. Fuck. Creating a swirl of balsamic vinegar within a circle of extra virgin olive oil causes my stomach to rumble. So many raging appetites at the moment. At least there's one I can satisfy quickly. As I dip a piece of warm sourdough bread into the oil, Briggs appears with a serving bowl of paella. Did the girl text you that she'd be late? Briggs' lips form a thin line. I texted her at 5 after. She says she's not available for dinner tonight. Leaning back in the chair, I frown. Was she rude to you? It's rude to announce cancellation by text when dinner's already being plated. Forward me her phone number and your text exchanges with her. Briggs straightens, and his eyes study my face. To evaluate her behavior? Or mine? My brows rise. Hers. Will I be unhappy with yours? Briggs shrugs, and his blasé expression looks very French. Put some paella and the bread pudding in containers for takeaway, of course. But may I ask a question, he says. My features rearrange themselves to express my displeasure. Briggs is a great chef and a decent personal assistant, but I've got much better choices for advice and counsel. If he continues to insert his opinions where they're not wanted, I'll have to deal with him in a way that's likely to turn his mood sour for weeks. You may, I say. The new girl's not of the same caliber as Miss Buchanan. She seems pretty ordinary, actually. He purses his lips distastefully, and she comes from an untrustworthy family. My head cocks, and my expression turns more grave. I don't know what he overheard or how, but I'll definitely be more careful going forward. Not that I should need to be. This is none of his business, which he should definitely fucking know. What's your question, Briggs? Is it safe to bring someone so questionable into your inner circle? You normally guard it so fiercely. Your concern seems genuine, so I appreciate the sentiment behind it. That being said, don't ever raise the subject again. My tone is mild, but I can tell by his pensive expression that the words have hit their mark. Without blinking, he sails on as if the awkwardness doesn't exist. I made a plant-based frozen dessert. Pistachio cream with a dash of black pepper. I'll try it another night. Yes, sir, he says, leaving silently. Chapter 11. Declan. When I arrive at Cameron's, there's a police squad car in the driveway, making me wonder what the hell happened and whether she's all right. Before I can even exit the vehicle, an officer appears and shines a light through the passenger window. Rolling the windows down, I glance into the bright light.
and my eyes narrow reflexively. Evening. I'm Declan Hayworth, a GU student. Could you lower that flashlight a few inches so it's not shining in my eyes? The beam drops to my neck.
What's your business here, Mr. Hayworth?
None of yours, I want to say, but I bite back the retort. I'm here to visit a friend, Cameron Reynolds. What's going on?
She isn't expecting you.
He says this as if it's a statement of fact, which tells me he's interviewed her and that the trouble, whatever it is, has something to do with her. Is she all right? I ask, opening the driver's door.
Yes, she is. Come around. I'll walk you in.
He speaks with the same authoritative tone he's been using, which sets my teeth on edge. I don't need his permission to go inside. Exiting the car, I keep my gaze trained in his direction. The young officer appears calm but watchful as he scans me with his flashlight. What happened? I'll let her tell you, he says noncommittally as we go to the house. Once inside, I see it's not a single home, but rather one that's been converted into apartments. They must be quite small. Only one door has light under it, so it's easy to guess which unit is hers. When she opens the door at my knock, she's dressed casually in jeans and a sweatshirt, but doesn't look as relaxed as her clothes. Her grim expression morphs into one of curiosity when her gaze takes me in.
Hey, what are you doing here?
I brought you the dinner you missed. What happened here? She looks past me to the cop, which I don't like. When I'm talking to her, I expect her attention to be on me.
All good on the property now, Cammy, the officer says. Would you like me to walk Mr. Hayworth back to his car?
Her lips twitch as though she's fighting a smile. Her eyes flick to my face, which I'm sure conveys my displeasure at the idea of being bounced by a public servant.
No, that's okay, she says, but thank you. I really appreciate your help.
Not a problem, the cop says. Do you need help with the door? My partner and I will give you a hand.
That goes beyond the call of duty. He also called her by a nickname. The cop is attracted to her, and he's trying to work his way in. Not going to happen. Raking my eyes over him, I size him up. He's fit. A little shorter than average height for a man, but he makes up for it with a posture that could pass for military.
I've got it, she says in a sweet tone. Too sweet. Thank you, though. Really?
Sure thing. We'll do a drive-by on the block several times tonight and over the next few days. Don't hesitate to call in anything suspicious.
She nods and he leaves reluctantly. The fact that I'm jealous surprises me. Jealous over a woman is the one negative emotion I've never had to battle. I push my way into her place, which turns out to be a single tiny room. Jesus. She needs money more than I thought. What happened here tonight?
Someone tried to break in. He either thought the house was empty or that I was asleep.
She shivers and draws in a deep breath.
I almost was. I just woken from taking a nap when I heard the lock rattling. I turned on the light and grabbed my phone to call 911, and he took off. An attempted break-in?
Right on the heels of Casanova's spree has to be unsettling for her. Did you see his face? Shaking her head, she frowns.
Mask.
She's surprisingly calm, given the circumstances. I set the food on her small dinette table and go to the back door. The lock's damaged. Sliding my phone out, I call my security detail.
Yes, sir.
I'm in 4B. Come and look at the back door, and then get someone here to fix or replace the lock. Her sharp intake of breath causes my gaze to shift to her.
You don't have to hold on.
Lowering my phone an inch, I ask, what?
I called my landlord. Someone will be here in the morning.
Raising my phone again, I say, yeah, Cooper, come ahead. I swipe to end the call.
If my name is attached to the request, it'll be fixed tonight. Let me handle this for you.
Her weight shifts from one foot to the other. She wants my help, but thinks it's a bad idea to accept it.
There's some wood and a hammer, she murmurs, glancing away. I can secure the door myself until tomorrow.
Wood and a hammer?
I'm sure my expression is bemused as my eyes drop to her small hands. Cooper appears in the doorway, causing Cameron to jump. His dark fatigues and brush cut do make his appearance jarring. Most of my daytime security team wears suits to blend in, but the night team are ex-military and don't care who knows it. A break-in attempt, I tell him. If you notice something outside, make a note of it. Cooper nods, inspects the door, and melts back into the darkness. Turning my attention back to the girl with the problem, I ask, "Why didn't you come to dinner?"
"For the obvious reason. I didn't want to see you."
Her defiant expression reaches into me to issue its challenge. Interestingly, I'm more amused than annoyed. Most women do whatever it takes to please me. I like her resistance, though I'm going to break it down when we're in bed together. "Are you trying to call off the deal?"
"Yes," she murmurs. "You're so rude, Declan. If I lived with you, I doubt I'd make it 24 hours before hitting you in the head with a heavy object."
That brings on a smirk. "If you tried, do you think you'd succeed? There are about 10 weight classes between us.
I'd be stealthy."
My gaze sweeps over her skeptically.
"Maybe you'd be asleep," she says cheekily.
I almost smile, but manage to stop myself.
"Listen, we can resolve this without..."
She trails off as though it makes her uncomfortable to discuss the arrangement.
"Even if we don't hook up, I'll still sign off on the fact that nothing happened between us and the Hamptons. And I'll still pay you back the money, if you want."
"I don't want the money. I want you for 2 weeks, which you agreed to. We have a verbal contract." Heat rises in her face, causing her cheeks to take on a rosy glow. "It's pretty."
"Then sue me for breach of contract," she says.
A look passes between us,
and we both chuckle. "Seriously, though? You're such an arrogant monster, Declan. You threatened my family with eviction. Your uncle and whoever else are hounding my mom. I'm not having that for the next 2 weeks."
The flush grows, and her voice rises.
"I've told her to tell the next person who emails to go to hell. If you want to rip the house out from under us, fine. We'll find another place to live, and I'll leave school to help out. Calm down."
Fury flashes in her eyes, but whatever curses she wants to hurl, she holds them in check.
"Listen," I say softly, trying to soothe her.
"If I settle the house situation, so your family's left alone and we never mention the past again, can I trust you to keep your part of the deal?"
Her eyes narrow. "What exactly would the deal be?"
"I'll own you for 2 weeks.
Own me. Like a sex slave?
Along those lines?"
"Yes."
There's no hesitation in my answer, and her lips part in shock.
"Listen," she says softly, her expression easing a bit. "I'm sure your uncle told you I'm still a virgin, so you probably think I'll be easy to control, but that's not the case with me. I'm not a virgin because I'm super sweet and took a purity pledge or anything."
She rubs the heels of her hands over her jeans.